hello, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much
that I built a dinosaur skeleton out of books.
I was going to say that I wrote the entire genetic code out to a DNA strand for a dinosaur.
Well, that's loving books too much.
Also, I don't know science that well.
Yeah. Also, my dinosaur model wasn't that impressive. There were too many vertebrae.
Fucking Timmy! He pointed that out to you. Like,
yes, he told me.
It has 35 vertebrae.
Excuse me, Ben, but I believe that T-Rex has too many vertebrae.
That's what it sounded like.
And then you just punched him in the face.
I punched his...
Broke his nerd glasses?
Yeah, I punched his dick clean off. And then I fed it to a raptor.
Well, they would probably enjoy that, actually.
They probably would.
Anyway, this week we're talking about Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park by Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
Mikey Cricky.
Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
We actually hinted last week that this was maybe going to be a special episode, and we have not one, but two guests on today's podcast.
That's amazing. We usually can't even get two listeners, let alone two guests.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, by the way, I'm Ben.
Oh, I'm Gabs.
And our guests are our
guests for the day are Casey Hanford.
Hello.
Esteemed paleontologist.
Indeed. Insofar as I have no degrees regarding paleontology nor any real expertise to speak of.
Let me put it this way. He's as qualified to talk about paleontology and books as I am.
Which is to say...
Hey, if you're tuning in, that's just the right amount. Exactly.
We also have with us Saeed Khan, Jurassic Park superfan.
Howdy.
And also our new unpaid intern.
Awesome.
He took notes for today.
That's right.
We were impressed by his effort.
A little bit overzealous.
If there's anything wrong with the mixing, you can feel free to blame it on him, whether or not it's his fault.
Exactly. I agree. That should be one of your intern tasks. That takes a lot of time out of my week.
I should mention that Saeed's expertise in the field of Jurassic Park is in movie viewings. How many times have you seen the movie?
Probably close to 50.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Not what, never what, enough.
Wait, there's a Jurassic Park movie too?
I
gotta watch it.
About that.
Tune in next week for a live viewing of Ben watching Jurassic Park.
Yeah, right. Fat guy boringly watching movies. Yeah, I mean, as everyone knows, Jurassic Park is a movie, and actually, I'm sure there are people out there who didn't even know it was a book first.
That's probably true. I'm going to assume everyone who listens to us probably knows that, though.
Hopefully. But, I mean, Casey and I are actually having the conversation of, if you hear Jurassic Park, your first thought is the film.
Unless you're a hipster, in which case your first thought's the film, and then you tell everyone it was the book.
Is that how that works?
My dad is a sci-fi hipster. Every time a new movie comes out about a book he read when he was in, like, you know, college, he always takes the purest route and says the book is better.
Well, the book is frequently better. He has a model of a T-Rex on his desk built out of PBR cans. With the correct number of vertebrae.
Yeah, probably. That wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe at the end of the podcast we can determine if this book is better than the
movie. Well, there you go. Ooh.
That'll be your cliffhanger beginning opener. Before we get started, I mean, this book's old, but if you've only seen the movie, there are some deviations. Excuse me. So I do want to mention the fact that we do have a spoiler policy, which is to say that we spoil everything.
Yep, every single thing. We give no shits. We want to talk about the whole book, not just the parts that are common knowledge.
So if you are interested in reading the book and you've only seen the movie, you should turn off the podcast.
Yeah, because if you don't, you're going to learn that John Hammond, secretly a dick.
Oh, and he dies.
And yeah, he totally gets eaten. And it's so amazing.
He gets eaten by dinosaurs that aren't even in the movie.
Probably the most satisfying part of the ending.
Arguably. Yeah.
Actually, I quite enjoyed that. Malcolm dies too. Jeff Goldblum, excuse me. Jeff Goldblum dies.
Yes, Jeff Goldblum dies. He just changed his name every time I read it to Jeff Goldblum.
I mean, kind I can definitely of. Get behind that casting choice. Of any of them, that's like the best as far as how the character is portrayed in the novel.
I agree, actually. When I was reading, I kept picturing Jeff Goldblum with Malcolm's lines just because him saying them makes so much sense.
Yeah, it totally does.
I mean, stereotypically nerdy Jew, it just...
Fair enough.
And some of the stuff he did, like the, I only wear black and gray. I was like, oh, Jeff Goldblum.
I do math, and my math has made me angsty.
Yeah, that was pretty random. Okay, well, so for anybody who hasn't seen or read Jurassic Park or know anything about it, which seems highly unlikely, the book is a thriller adventure novel about, you know, it sets itself up as a science about genetics and creating dinosaurs, but it's really just about people running away from dinosaurs.
Right. Yeah. You could argue it's near future science fiction, but I don't think it would have sold as many millions of copies if that was true, unfortunately.
I mean, it's your general run-of-the-mill Crichton novel where the science fiction sets up some kind of environment for him to have sweet action sequences. Otherwise, improbable if he were to take a more realistic setting.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. But it's actually a fun way to approach a plot.
And it sells, that's for sure.
Yeah. And this book is fun shit, so...
It keeps it from being, like, trite, as many other action novels tend to be.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as, like...
It doesn't feel as cookie-cutter as something.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's kind of nice. You put yourself outside the box and then write the action there instead of, like, trying to put your prose into what people generally think of as, you know, stereotypical have-to-establish-a-hero sort of situations. It's like your general war novel, like, trap, where they all end up sounding pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. We have a unit composed of the same 12 people every time.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I like Tropic Thunder. They're like sassy black guy. Like hardened New Yorker. New guy. Like, here are your war stereotypes. Have fun.
So what's your plot synopsis?
Holy fucking shit. It's a dinosaur.
Holy fucking shit, it's a dinosaur!
It's a goddamn dinosaur!
Oh, hey, look, more dinosaurs.
The T-Rex is about trying to kill you for approximately the 100th time in the book.
We just survived dinosaurs, let's have ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh no, more dinosaurs.
First of all, it's ginger-flavored ice cream.
Which sounds disgusting.
That was a little weird.
Am I the only one who thinks that sounds disgusting?
I've had it before. It's pretty good.
Maybe you just can't go too heavy on the ginger.
I was going to mention the fact that while they're eating the ginger ice cream, we do get another female character. Maria, did you know that she's not from here? Her mother's fucking French or something. I was like, okay, random as hell. Like, three sentences. I really, okay, didn't need that information.
I can just imagine, like, Michael Crichton's wife reading the manuscript up to that point and being like, you just don't have enough women.
Fine.
Rolls his eyes.
I'll throw in a detail about Maria and her amazing ginger ice cream made from real redheads.
No wrong reason. No. Gone forever.
The box says decidedly soul free.
So what's the actual setting of this place?
An island off the coast of Costa Rica. Ooh, mm-hmm. Coast and Costa, too close
Fool.
Together.
East of the Nublar.
Yeah.
To be specific.
I was about to say that.
Cloud Island.
Of clouds.
Cloud Ooh. Island, yeah. Because it's foggy.
Because that's where dinosaurs lived, in clouds.
Everyone knows that.
Everyone does now.
Apparently there is a bank of fog too hip for San Francisco.
Is that where the dinosaurs live?
In San Francisco.
It's like, whoa. Way too much fog here. Gotta go somewhere else.
The setting of the book is also 1989, which is not always obvious, but is sometimes obvious.
Yeah, every once in a while, just some of the technical references, especially electronics. Oh, look at this really cool thing. Like, it has a CD-ROM attached to it.
Whoa, graphical interface.
Yeah.
Amazing.
A touchscreen computer. Oh, shit. Like, oh man, guys.
Timmy, now 34 years old, takes this as a commonplace occurrence.
Yeah.
He's just amazed every time he goes through the grocery store line.
And the... okay, someone might have to correct me. I'm not super science-y, but he was saying, you know, they hadn't been able to sequence a DNA strand yet. They have done that now, haven't they?
Yes, the Human Genome Project is complete.
I thought so.
And it didn't take $4 million supercomputers to do it. I actually can't speak for how much it did take.
I'm sure it cost a lot.
Probably not as much as they're purporting Jurassic Park would take, because they actually have live humans to sample from, as opposed to, like, having to chain together fragments of impossible-to-sequence DNA.
Yeah, about that. So, the book is written focusing around several different plot lines. Does this mean that we have a protagonist?
You know, you could make an argument. What I think is it's either Alan Grant or no one. You could also maybe argue that there are co-protagonists, depending on how important you think different chunks of the book are. But Grant's clearly the protagonist of the adventure portion of the book, which is really the purpose of it. So I can stick with that myself.
I mean, he is the dinosaur expert in the books about dinosaurs.
And he is the one running from the dinosaurs and restoring the power grid and saving the children.
Yeah.
I mean, you can kind of put it into, like, a good versus evil, people versus dinosaurs sort of view, except then you end up disliking some of the people so much you kind of just don't associate with them anymore.
It's really the hubris of man versus nature is the central conflict.
Yeah, because the dinosaurs aren't ever described as evil. Like, even when the velociraptors and the T-Rex are fucking shit up, it's like, well, that's what they do.
It felt kind of bad. Like, the T-Rex was trying to eat them for, like, it was on its 90th attempt to eat them, and then it finally passes out into the water, and they're like, oh, I hope it doesn't drown. Except for Lex, who was like, fuck that dinosaur, I hope it does drown.
Yeah, I will say, the dinosaurs were particularly fond of children, everywhere from infants to 12-year-olds, apparently.
Tearing off the faces of babies. And...
But they just look so helpless.
That is one moment where I did agree with Lex. I was like, yeah, fuck that T-Rex. That thing is so obnoxious. Like,
all it took was a rocket-launched tranquilizer dart.
That's right.
We got him. He's going to stay now.
Well, once it got the taste of sweet, sweet human flesh, it couldn't resist anymore.
Oh, the scene where it was, they described it like trying to get behind the waterfall and like had its tongue wrapped around
it. Yeah, that was awesome. Pronged tongue, like, wrapped around his face and was, like, drawing him in. I was like,
hello.
Did anyone else notice that every single time dinosaur spit was mentioned, it was always called foamy saliva?
Yes, I did, actually.
I was like, really? What's that about? They all, like, super foamy mouths for some reason. They always brushed their teeth.
So. It's that high lysine diet.
That must be it.
They did talk about brushing their teeth, though.
They did talk about brushing the T-Rex, yeah. Well, I mean, I understand why, because when they hadn't brushed his teeth, her teeth...
It's teeth.
there were, like, fucking flies everywhere. It was gross.
Yeah.
I was like, ew, that's how dinosaurs actually operate.
A big mouth full of rotting meat.
Right.
Yum.
Yummy.
You just gotta imagine that eventually the park was gonna open up and they were gonna have, like, Rembrandt ads on the outside of the T-Rex cage. Yeah.
It's like these sparkling white teeth.
Crest white strips.
Yeah.
The advertisement has, like, a cartoon T-Rex with a big smile.
Rexy says.
Rexy says. I did like how they kept referring to it as Rexy, actually.
Yeah.
Or the Rex. I'm tracking the Rex. Oh, old Rexy's moved over into this quadrant.
And then young Rexy.
And then little Rexy.
Little shit upstart Rexy.
Big and little Rexy.
Now, I'm thinking, because we just went from a discussion of Grant to, like, a longer discussion on the dinosaurs' personalities. So is it fair to say that the dinosaurs have more personality than the people?
Quite possibly.
I think it is. I thought almost every character in here was a cardboard cutout.
Yeah.
Grant, in particular, I was just thought he was really flat. He was... Like, here's a good guy. What they needed was the Gamera good kid just to be there like, Dr. Grant's good! He saved the children!
at a nice level of racism.
Well, as is the tradition, yes.
Well, I mean, there's no amount of, like, emotion that isn't just given to you. Like, you can't really infer anyone's thoughts. They're just, well, Hammond's clearly really pissed off that his park is failing.
Right.
So he's going to yell at everyone until he dies.
Hammond might have been the most developed human character.
Yeah.
And he was a dick.
He was a huge dick.
So for those of you who've seen the movie where he is this cartoonish, clownish, like, happy, bouncy grandpa character who finally sees the errors of his way, in the book, he is an unrepentant shit.
Yeah, seriously. Like, the entire park is falling to shit, and he's just like, I still have embryos stashed away somewhere. I'm going to build another one.
That's true.
I was like, fucking seriously?
Mr. Hammond, people are dying. Just don't hurt my dinosaurs. They're expensive, damn it. The park's still going to open on time. They only ate 43 native workers.
I really liked the conversation he had where he's like, why the fuck would you use science to help people?
Yeah. That was very direct.
There's a moral prerogative that comes up where the scientist, Dr. Wu, wants to engineer the dinosaurs to be more docile and safer to handle with and, you know, less likely to fuck people up in general. And Hammond is still considering the park to be a natural preserve where there needs to be action and excitement, and so why not just have live bloodthirsty dinosaurs going at each other the entire time? Totally failing to see the potential failings of that device.
Well, they were all just so fixated on the fact that this park could not possibly fail. You know, like, the dinosaurs would be contained, and no matter what happened... Oh, wait, power failure.
Yeah.
Didn't plan for that.
Oh, also, they've already been escaping, so...
Not right. To mention, yeah.
Yeah. It fails in about every facet it can possibly fail in.
That's true.
It's one of those, like, everything that can go wrong will scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Like... to an almost comic degree every once in a while. Like, oh, we finally got it, and now everything's fucked up. Grant got the power on. Wu's intestines are now on the ground.
Yeah, right. Aw, poor Dr. Wu. He just wanted to make some dinosaurs and get his name on a really cool paper.
Is this going to get published? Possibly.
Yeah. Am I allowed to publish this? Now, come on, that would be... If you go to the geneticist conference and your talk is, I made dinosaurs! Like, you can pretty much, for your talk, just unzip your pants and set your dick on the table.
You get the keynote address at, like, every right. biological discussion for the next decade.
Plus, you're probably a billionaire.
Yeah.
Which ain't too bad.
No.
Which was part of the goal of the park. Well, which was the goal of the park, I should say.
Yes, to make lots and lots of money.
Yeah, that was the other thing about him, and he was an elitist dick. Yeah. He's like, the kids can come enjoy my park. At least the rich ones.
Yeah. That's right.
And I was like, you are the 1%.
I can charge $10,000 a head. They'll pay. Oh, they'll pay. Believe me, they'll pay.
I was thinking about it, like, if there actually was a dinosaur park with legitimate dinosaurs in it, like, people would fucking pay thousands of dollars.
If Jurassic Park had ruined everyone's vision of the safety of said park.
Well, and if it was, you know, actually possible...
Like, hell, I'm not going to that island. Mm-hmm. Kidding me? It's a death trap.
I've seen this one before.
Well, you know, they should just have made, like, the nice ones.
Just the nice ones. No Rexes, no the Raptors were clearly a mistake.
Yeah.
Only a park full of duck-billed dinosaurs.
Yeah, like the Hadrosaurs and the Apatosaurs and, like, the Stegosaurus and Triceratops.
Just baby raptors for people to cuddle.
Yeah, apparently baby raptors are really cuddly. Who knew?
Unless you lift them up into the air and then right. they fucking go crazy.
Well, then they get pissed off, but they don't have teeth, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, you try giving a 3-year-old, like, a scientific examination. See how they respond to that.
Next time you see a toddler, pick them up, hold them up above your head, and examine their undercarriage. Their parents like that, by the way.
And then flip them over and hold them by their ankles, like, shake them a little bit.
I bet they won't yell at all.
I bet you won't get arrested for that.
There will be no repercussions whatsoever.
It's some, like, Damien Omen child that just stares at you reprehensibly the whole time.
You're like, oh god, it's a demon.
That's even worse. I wish it was screaming. I wish the police would get here. So, how about some of our other human characters?
Okay. Well, I mean, we have the... I was going to say most obvious counterpart to Grant, but maybe that's just because of the movie, but you have Ellie Sattler, the graduate student.
Paleobotanist extraordinaire.
True story.
Loves plants. She fucking loves plants.
And short shorts.
And short shorts. Yeah, that was her primary characterization. She had short shorts. And she can run fast, apparently.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I was actually pretty fucking impressed by her aerobatics toward the end of the book. Like, climbing a tree, jumping on the roof, flailing herself into a pool. I was like, I would be so dead right now.
Yeah, she only gets the one scene to shine, but she kicks some ass big time. Well, as much as fleeing for your life is kicking ass anyway.
Yeah.
And she does get to taunt the dinosaurs behind a big cage.
That's true.
Yeah. Is she
dancing up and down. Woo!
Figures that what happened to the sick Triceratops?
Yeah, she does get some.
Stego? I don't remember.
The Stegos, yeah.
Well, it was Grant the stones. Didn't Grant figure out the stones and then she related it to the berries?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what happened. Yeah. So it was a co-figuring out. But she does jump in every once in a while and kind of finish explaining a point that Grant makes. Right. She gets to be smart a few times, which is nice. She just doesn't get nearly as much page time as almost any male character.
Yeah. Well, and she definitely aids in, like, pointing out how poorly planned the park is. By the way, the beautiful looking prehistoric plants by the pool.
Right.
Definitely poisonous.
Yeah, that fern, when a 3-year-old eats that, he's going to get really sick. And a 3-year-old's going to eat that because that's what they do.
Right. It's a pretty little green thing. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if this tastes good.
Yeah.
And little kids are fucking stupid.
Yeah. Put anything in their mouth.
Settler's definitely something the movie, like, took away from my appreciation from the book because I couldn't help but seeing her in, like, the pseudo-romantic relationship that's hinted at by the movie, and then her being, like, a 24-year-old grad student to professorly Dr. Grant, like, kind of creeped me out a bit, even though, like, there's
right.
not even a hint of romance alluded to in the novel. It's just kind of, like, still totally ruined from having seen the movie.
The novel, like, specifically says, there's nothing there.
Yeah, the kid asks the question, and Grant squashes it immediately.
He actually
just laughs. He's like, no. Oh god, no. She's my student.
Like, I don't have tenure yet. I can't do that.
Like, that's way wrong.
All the fan fiction writers, like, whatever, man.
Yeah, like, it would stop them. Forbidden love, man. That probably spawned fan fiction. Except it was pre-internet for the most part.
No, there's still fan fiction before the internet.
Well, that's true, but it was harder to find.
People would just Xerox it and, like, post it on boards, random literature clubs.
You go to, like, a convention and be like, hey, read this story I wrote.
Read my Malcolm Hammond hate slap.
Oh, God. While Malcolm dies of a broken leg, he and Hammond have one last disgusting moment together. Whoever wants to die.
The steamiest hell.
Putrefying flesh.
God. Okay, I'm gonna die and throw up now.
So what? Malcolm and Hammond were pretty contentious, though. I mean, the fanficers loved that shit. Yeah, Malcolm's role was to just stand on a hill and shout, I told you so, for the whole novel.
Yeah, I actually liked him for the first half of the book pretty well.
Yeah, well, that's because he was acerbic and witty in the first half of the book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was, I mean, in his defense, in the second half of the book, he was doped up on morphine.
Right.
But it turned him into a pedantic, rambling, lecturing douchebag.
Yeah.
Insofar as you can ramble about, I told you so.
Yeah,
well, like, boy, could he. He rambled, he, like, had a 7-page monologue on the folly of man.
Yeah. Every time they cut to, like, Malcolm's bedroom, I was like, oh, fuck, he's just gonna, like, just talk about.
I told you this is a bad idea. Nature always finds a way. Give me more drugs.
Yeah. By the way, raptors chewing on the bars above our heads.
Yeah, right. A bite strength of 1,500 pounds per square inch.
That seemed a little bit unbelievable, but
it's semi-believable to me, actually.
Yeah.
I think I read once that, like, German shepherds have a bite strength of 700 pounds per square inch.
Really?
So, get a fucking badass predatory dinosaur. I could see that.
At times, the raptors did feel kind of extreme to me, though.
I don't know, I feel like raptors versus metal bars should lose.
Seems like chewing through steel, like, there are things other than bite pressure that would come into play. Like, wouldn't you chip a tooth?
Yeah, like, wouldn't all your teeth break?
I mean, last time I tried to chew my way through a steel bar, it didn't go well.
Plot device, Mr. Frodo. Plot device.
Well, I mean, they were like the best predators and really smart, and they could do this, and they could jump up like an entire story and open doors.
Yeah, they were pretty... Megan Smart was part of why they were so scary, though. Like, it's like, here's this creature that is bloodthirsty and, you know, not maybe not as smart as a person, but way smarter than most animals, and so you can't just casually outsmart it.
Right. Turn it from being like a zombie apocalypse, how do I fight this horde of blithering idiots, into, well, how do I outwit this clearly cunning predator?
Right. Well, I just think of, like, dogs that we've had that were good at escaping from the gates. It's like, well, what if it was good at escaping from the gate, and then after it escaped from the gate, it disemboweled you and ate you?
Right.
Like, all these rigs we tried to keep the dog from climbing the stupid gate, and it just kept getting out.
Yeah.
It's way more intimidating when you have somebody that can both destroy you physically and, you know, outwit your simplest attempts to escape it.
That's why I took an asteroid to kill them.
That's right. Right.
No one saw that coming. Fuckers.
Future raptor-dominated humans sent the asteroid back in time. This is the book I'm writing now, by the way. I expect it will be a bestseller.
Interesting. I kind of... dinosaurs and people are so different. Like, I really don't think they would exist at the same time.
Yeah, well, I mean, the rise of mammals only possible because that asteroid wiped the dinosaurs out in the first place.
It's hard to figure out how to use tools when you just keep getting eaten.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's why the mammals were little and, like, could hide places.
You're right. Let's see, any other characters that we feel like we need to hit? How about Nedry?
Nedry. He's kind of an important plot point.
He's an important plot point, and actually he also fits in that category that's been coming up recently of villains with motivation.
Oh, yeah.
Believable motivation.
Yeah. Because he was a disgruntled contractor, I guess, more than employee, but like he was operating under all these really annoying and bad conditions, and then they made him do a whole bunch of reprogramming at the last minute without paying him for it.
Or telling him what he was doing.
Right, after it was basically their fault that he couldn't do it. And so, yeah, I would have been a little pissed, too, in his shoes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I felt like he was being fairly disgruntled. I would be pissed if they made me do way more work and said, oh, here's your paycheck.
Now, what he should have done is take them to court.
Right. Or, you know... blackmail them like good employees.
Yeah, exactly.
But competitive corporate espionage, now that's just unacceptable.
Yeah, don't shut down the fences and let everyone get eaten. That's just a dick move.
I mean, I did think in the movie, it was never entirely clear to me that he, like, meant to come back. I thought he was just being a douche. In the book, I kind of like that added element of, like, I'm going to try to slip out and slip back before anyone really realizes what's going on. So he wasn't intentionally, like, trying to fuck everything up.
That's true. I mean, well, yeah, especially since fucking everything up resulted in him getting eaten.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta understand, the guy's probably under a lot of strain, having been the solo programmer for a computer system that, like, decrypted, what, 24 different dinosaur DNA strands?
Oh, yeah, I mean, he...
4 supercomputers, 1 program. Figure it out.
It really did sound... like a nightmare scenario as far as a job goes. I mean, something where you'd have to work every waking hour for probably weeks at a time to make it happen.
I don't know. It seems like bad practice to have one person be completely responsible for your entire computer system.
Yeah. I mean, he had a team that he was communicating with, but he was the only one on the island where the stuff was. And so to communicate with everyone else, he had to do it via modem in 1989.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the plot points, too, and none of the phones were working after his program went. He said, oh, well, it's just the modem taking up all the phone lines. I said, oh, okay. Probably have, I mean, like, the 14.4 bit rate? That would have been the good one then, right?
You can just imagine, like, that modem sound happening in the middle of the Jurassic Park control room with all of the big TVs.
Be like the final insult. Like you're being chased by a raptor and there's horrible modem noises all around you.
That part actually confused me when they were like, oh, damn it, you're tying up all the phone lines. And I was like, how is he talking on all of the phones? I don't get it.
Nice.
I wasn't even like, oh, dial-up internet.
Culture gap.
21st century.
Uh-oh.
No Google Fiber.
So there's a spot where it shows its age.
And I even had to use dial-up for a couple years.
That's true, yeah. You were barely old enough for that, I guess.
I'm old enough for that.
Did you use your America Online?
I used MSN, bro. I was a Hotmail kid. Oh, wait, there was one more thing I did want to say about Ned Drew really quick. Even though I liked all that stuff about his character, I was like, fucking really, when they were like, fat dude with chocolate all over his fingers. I was like, okay. Like, that was something I actually assumed that the movie was just like, nerdy computer programmer, lol. And then I read the book and I was like, oh, that's like literally his character.
Almost always had a candy bar in his hand.
Like, he meets him and his hand's covered in chocolate. And I was like, you're an adult. You're a candy bar.
It reminds me of Harold from The Stand, where it's just like, early Harold, when he's still fat and always eating chocolate papers.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like, goddamn, Harold, do you really need that many fucking... Paydays are gross anyway. Like, I don't know if I mentioned that during The Stand podcast, but I hate paydays.
Admittedly, probably the smartest person on that island, but has to be tragically misunderstood, overweight, and then take his vengeance out on everybody else.
Yeah. Hooray!
Oh, nerds get treated so well in Vengeance storytelling.
But anyway, yeah, now we can move on to the kids.
Yeah, the kids. So, we'll start with Lex, because she's simpler.
We'll start with some pickle.
She's a 7-year-old tomboy.
I'm hungry.
Who's always hungry.
I mean, they haven't eaten in like 24 hours. I'd be hungry, too.
Well, yes, but... You think at some point, I mean, I know that kids are kids, and when they're hungry, they're going to complain about being hungry, but, like, if you're just getting chased by a dinosaur, maybe even a 7-year-old has some inkling that now is not the time to bring that up. Like, okay, how are we going to escape? I'm hungry! Okay, that's great, but we're about to get eaten. I want some food! You're about to be food!
What's wrong with that?
I'm pretty sure even 7-year-olds have fight or flight reflexes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not if they want to play pickle, though.
That's right.
Not if they want to play some pickle.
If someone asked me if I wanted to play pickle, I would probably assume they were coming on to me. I don't even know what that means.
You'd be like, you're 7, that's creepy.
That's weird.
Yeah, like baseball?
That was probably the lawyer's first response, is like sexual harassment? Oh, you've got a glove and a ball. Okay, let's play catch.
I've still never heard someone call that pickle. I'm wondering if that was a thing from Michael Crichton's generation that never quite made it to mine.
We always called it rundown.
No, we always called it catch.
Well, yeah, about that.
It might not actually be catch. They never really go into the specifics of it. Like, that's true. Could be like keep away, which I could see being, you know, tantamount to like a pickle in baseball circumstances. But it always seems she's playing with one person, so you just assume it's catch.
The baby raptor is trying to get the ball from them. It's like jumping adorably and just missing every time.
Keep away. Yeah, but that's basically Lex's character.
Yeah.
Yep. And then there's Timmy.
Timmer.
No, not that Timmy.
Oh.
Push up your glasses for Timmy.
Yes.
Tim. He is the dinosaur nerd.
Melvin.
As previously mentioned, he's the one Melvin. Who goes to a museum and goes, that T-Rex has too many vertebrae. And his dad's like, what the fuck? I mean, his dad sounds like a little bit of a dick, but, I mean, if my kid said that, I'd be like, what the...
Where do you come up with this stuff?
Why are you looking at the skeleton and counting its vertebrae?
Like, I'm too busy looking at the teeth.
You're 11, stop that.
It's weird.
Tim actually ends up being smarter, more capable than many of the adults in the book.
That's true. Tim is the computer expert in the book. For those of you who know the movie,
by knowing how to like touch a screen, wasn't actually that.
Well, he's the kind of computer expert that like I am when I work with clueless people who are like, the computer's broken. Have you tried like pushing stuff? No, because it's scary. Well, try clicking on things until it works. Like, it's not that hard.
Technological intuition.
Yeah.
Like, you follow the menus. It's really not hard. But I think it was a pretty decent example of that kind of disconnect, which Michael Crichton obviously would be familiar with, being a technical type of guy. And of course, having the stereotypical setup of the kid and the adult, where Grant goes, well, I don't really know computers. Like, he's afraid of it. He won't even try. And Tim's like, well, I guess I'll just go through some menus. It's like, Grant, you could do that. And you know more of those words than he does.
I know the adults are like, well, Tim, just try to get the power on there, buddy.
Okay, boop, 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 pressing buttons at random.
Well, secretly, they're all just like cowering in fear, knowing that nothing good's going to happen.
If only Dr. Wu was still here.
Or Nedry, what?
Or Arnold, even.
Yeah. Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts. Hold on to your butts. That line never gets said in the book. Very disappointing.
Because I know, I was waiting. I was waiting for that line to happen so that I could read it in my head as Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, what do you say when they tried it up? Was it something like, okay, here we go? Something really generic.
Oh, I don't even remember at all.
It was something really generic. He did say something before he tried to flip the power back on.
Also, when they got a Nedry's computer, there wasn't an You didn't say the magic word.
Which kind of goes back into Nedry not really being as bad as he's portrayed in the movie. Like, I don't think he intended to just ruin everything. He wanted to steal the embryos.
Right.
He wanted to make a couple million bucks.
Make a delivery, get back to the control room.
But he was still planning on fixing all the bugs in
That's
the system.
True.
Right.
The perfect crime.
Right. He's like, I don't know how our competitors got all the dinosaur embryos. Wah, wah. I still keep my job.
I mean, at some point, Dr. Wu would have noticed they were missing, but
I imagine.
He wasn't that incompetent.
Right. I mean, if nothing else, someone would have gone in there for some embryos and been like, I thought we had three of these. We're down to one. This is our last one.
Damn it, you know I always keep these racks full for at least aesthetic reasons.
That's right. I can't stand looking at those empty spots.
It bothers me when there's a gap.
So I keep a couple in my freezer at home, just in case.
Questionable.
Jurassic Park definitely, some of the flavor drinks.
Jurassic Park definitely seems like the kind of place where they'd have like that $1 million freezer that you have a handle on top and you pull it up and all the embryos are inside. Yeah. But then there's a post-it note labeling each one.
Right.
It's like we spent $10 million on this refrigerating system and then used post-it note.
They got like half-assed on everything.
Like our intern scribbled it and like taped it to the tube.
Right.
You can tell they tried Sharpie before and it just didn't work.
Rubbed off too.
It wouldn't write on the frost. They would have had to put it on there before they froze everything.
We're out of money. It's time for elbow grease. Muldoon.
Muldoon? Sure, why not Muldoon?
Well, who fucking cares about Muldoon?
He's the one that tells you the raptors are going to kill everybody.
White. That's
unfortunately,
right.
He's a famous white hunter.
That's true.
Does that mean he's white, or does that mean he hunts white people? That's what I wanted to know.
Fair enough. Maybe, it could be he hunts white people. Like, I could see that being one of Hammond's hobbies. He's like the guy who helps him track his prey.
Right. You can definitely see Hammond, like, you know, moonlighting as the antagonist from The Most Dangerous Game.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like this insane billionaire.
People are the most dangerous game.
Them and velociraptors.
I guess we're kind of spoiling that, but who the fuck cares?
Anytime you can use the title line from a 30-year-old movie, you almost have to.
Who doesn't know that? Like, The Most Dangerous Game, like, even if you've never read it, you're just like, oh yeah, people.
Yeah.
Duh.
Oh, right, it's like Soylent Green.
Yeah, that thing.
Spoiler alert, punchy pits. Not good for feet. Well, I mean, and I think it's interesting that the movie portrayal of Muldoon, he's wearing, like, khakis in a rainforest setting.
Yes.
Just, like, clearly dressed for savanna, like, African hunting
yes.
trip. Like, safari, by the way, rainforest.
Right.
Yeah, me too, dude.
In a jungle against creatures he knows to be extremely effective and dangerous hunters.
Yeah.
Although I guess they don't see very well.
They certainly don't in the
Not
book.
The T-Rex. No.
You just gotta chill out. You're fine.
That's true.
I've never understood, like, the physiological reason for motion-based sight.
I never understood why you can just smell the people and just eat them like that.
I know, like, if you get your nose right up against, I mean, people don't have a great sense of smell, but if your nose is a foot away from another person, you can smell them 10 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen The Descent?
No. Yes.
Is this horror movie where these, like, women get trapped underground while they're exploring a cave, and there are these creatures that are blind, and so, like, they hunt, you know, via sound, but apparently, like, also can't smell, because they'll be, like, right up next to the people, and they're, like, trying really hard to be quiet, but it's, like, right in front of them, and it obviously has a nose, and you're, like...
What's well, because the person
has... If it doesn't have sight, wouldn't it be able to... Wouldn't it have a heightened sense of smell? Like...
Well, maybe the person in the suit had to be able to breathe, so they had to give it a nose. I'm assuming it was a person in a suit.
Probably CGI.
All right.
I don't know.
A little bit of makeup.
If they hunt by sound, shouldn't there be echolocation? Like, don't they make their own sounds? Anyway, welcome to the Descent Podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it just reminded me of that when the T-Rex is, like, right there and it can't see him. It's like, why can't it smell it?
Your eyes are sensitive enough to, like, dilate rapidly when light is shined. Not dilate, but contract.
Yes.
It's like, but not so sensitive to actually see that there's a light right there.
It's a good thing it has a giant, gross, prehensile tongue, then.
Yeah. Just feel its way around.
That's how I'm going to start finding people in the dark.
Stick out your tongue and be like, blah, and then wrap it around them.
It'll be like echolocation, because...
And then get shot in the ass with
when I actually put my tongue on someone, they'll probably yell. Like, oh, there you are.
Found you.
My 5-foot tongue.
Gene Simmons is a dinosaur.
Well, I mean, we talked a lot. Like, I guess we didn't mention Wu is Asian, but...
Duh. I mean, it's Wu, so...
I'm trying to come up with a spelling of Wu that doesn't look Asian.
W-O-O?
That's still Asian to me.
Yeah.
Not to peg any of your listeners as racist, but I'm sure they figured it out.
There is... I don't know if I would even call it racism in the real sense, but there's
pattern recognition.
Definitely, well, like the Asian scientist, but then also the
was he from Cal too? Right,
it's something like that. Yeah, the native workers, I guess, too,
from a prestigious California university. I don't remember which one.
It was definitely one of those things where you read it like all of the main characters you pretty much just assume are white, and then it's like, oh, there's the crazy superstitious brown natives. And that was actually the most obvious to me at the very beginning, when you had the white female doctor in like the little field hospital by the coast, and her assistant was native, and they brought the torn up guy in, and she's like trying to help him, and the guy's like, no, he's been attacked by this demon. And I'm like, you're a fucking doctor.
A chupacabra. Yeah,
it might as well have been.
Like, you're a doctor. Why are you doing this, except for the fact that you're brown and superstitious? Like, that's so...
I don't know. I kind of assumed that all the main characters were Indian, but...
Interesting. Oh, you get a take on this.
Indians named Tim and Ellie and Alan.
You know, it's not the strangest thing that's ever happened. There's some anglicized names out there.
Those were all their American names.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like Saeed goes by Philip, which is not true, by the way. He's not a Philip. I don't see
Philip in that. No. and also we mentioned in the pre-discussion that the native workers in this book are kind of like the little ones in Lord of the Flies, and that we have no idea how many of them were murdered by dinosaurs. Like, they could have been just dying in droves in the background the whole time.
Yeah, at the end, Hammond sees a worker, and I'm like, oh, there are workers, like, alive and not dead and, you know, doing shit?
Haven't fled.
Yeah, we've been...
All the security guards were dead, apparently.
Yeah. Like, where are all the workers? Because they mentioned that some of them were hiding, but you never really saw them anything.
Maybe the workers were all dead, or not the workers, the guards were all dead based on video game logic, because you had to have a place to find key cards.
It's true.
I feel like Hammond would have used him like Cheerios to lead the T-Rex back. He just did not.
Right? The workers.
He's on the radio. I'm going to need a construction person in Sector 12. Watch the dot for the Rex come stomping over. All right, I'm going to need someone in Sector 11. Sector 10. I'm going to need the next guy to actually stand inside the T-Rex paddock.
All right, we're holding team building exercises. Everyone's going to go do calisthenics, preferably jumping jacks.
That's right.
On the roof.
Jumping up and down. Hey! And we also kind of touched a little bit earlier on the lack of good female characters. I mean, Dr. Sattler's pretty badass, but she doesn't
for
get a lot of
very brief amount
right
of
but she doesn't get a lot of time. And then Lex, in addition to being a kid who isn't all that developed, is just like a stock kid character.
Yeah, dead weight.
Oh, here's a tomboy. Yeah. We need a tomboy. Everyone loves tomboys.
Apparently.
They do. That's what people love Arya.
Well, Arya is more than just a tomboy.
Well, she's kind of...
Arya also does things and has emotions.
She's kind of stabby. Lex is not all that stabby. Though she'd probably throw a baseball at you really hard, even if you didn't have
it. I'm surprised they didn't use that as a weapon at some point.
I know.
She could have.
It would have been just a great little bit of comedic relief to see her be like, take this dinosaur, like, throw a baseball, and like actually scares away a raptor.
It's like, ow, shit.
Stuck the baseball in the T-Rex's blowhole.
Yeah. Putting its nose.
Actually, kind of like pegging a raptor with a baseball and having it run off would kind of be logical to me. I mean,
and almost redeeming to her character.
Like, an animal approaches something unfamiliar, like a person, and you make loud noises, sudden movements, or actually bounce something off its skull, it's probably going to leave you alone for at least a few minutes.
Right. Till it realizes that you only have the one baseball and can't
Right. Well, you know, most animals do not have the maybe more human reaction of getting pissed off and then trying to hurt you.
Hey, ow, dick.
Right, exactly. What are you doing? I'm going to kick your ass. Rather like, ah, what is it? Ow, it hurt me. I mean, not a lot. Maybe I'll eat it anyway. And by that time, like, they're halfway across the pen.
Are like, in the walk-in freezer?
Oh, not to chase it?
Dang.
Yeah, we actually were having this conversation that the movie makes Lex's character actually the older sibling and then gives her a little bit to do and helps develop Dr. Sattler a little bit so that you actually have more substantial female characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the rare example of Hollywood actually making the female characters slightly stronger.
I mean, you still have to deal with the fact that there are only two.
Right.
And
the sad thing is you can probably tie it into, like, demographic appeal, trying to get, you know, the tween, early teenage girls to come watch Jurassic Park.
Right, because the appeal to boys that age is obvious.
Right.
Like, fucking dinosaurs.
You don't need Tim as a character.
It doesn't make any sense to me because I was obsessed with dinosaurs when I was a kid.
You're also a nerd.
Yeah, but girls like dinosaurs, no. too.
I agree with what you're saying.
I don't like that assumption.
But I also know how, or have an idea of how marketers think, especially in especially in Hollywood and television. Like, it's all about, hey, if you want to get this group to watch, you have to get someone that looks like them in the film.
I'm not intending to hurt your feelings, but being the statistical exception does not make the statistics any different.
I know there are girls that like dinosaurs.
I don't.
Congratulations.
Jurassic Park super fan. I hate dinosaurs.
You're well versed in the minority.
Whatever. Y'all are dudes.
Not trying to
be. Y'all are dudes.
I'm not even trying to say it's the right way of thinking. I'm just saying I believe, I find it plausible that the reason it was done was for marketing.
Okay.
Which says more about society than it says about women.
I would believe.
Same reason that making Dr. Sattler old enough to have a pseudo implied relationship with Dr. Grant
was probably
a marketing decision.
Also done for marketing.
That's a very Hollywood thing to do.
They are incapable of making a movie without a romance in it somewhere.
If you can think of one, though, please send it in.
Yeah, that's right.
A Bollywood movie.
Well, that's not Hollywood.
Bollywood's obsessed with romance. Are you kidding me?
What about Battle Royale?
Like, every single Bollywood film is like, love story.
With cricket.
And songs.
If he hits that last six, he gets her
heart. Is there a Bollywood version of Jurassic Park?
I believe it. I'm sure there is. There's
gotta be.
Oh my god, I
bet it's amazing.
Is it set on a small island off Sri Lanka?
That one would be starring Indian people.
Yeah. And I bet the CG dinosaurs would look incredible.
It's just like clips from Godzilla. Like, blatantly ripped off clips.
It'd be like a sock puppet with big jagged teeth drawn on it on the end of a yardstick, like menacing a person's face. That's what I'm picturing.
Like a big hand puppet.
This is my completely unbiased and well-educated view of Bollywood I've gotten from never watching a Bollywood
it's
film.
It's not that far off, actually.
And of course, at some point, like, it all breaks down into song.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to sing the Running from the T-Rex song.
Speaking of Running from the T-Rex.
Okay.
There's a lot of Running from the T-Rex.
There is so much Running from the T-Rex.
Like, I understand that there's, like, two scenes in the movie, and they're both running from the same T-Rex. Like, well, and there's the run and hide with Grant and the kids, and then there's the car chase.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in the book, there's two T-Rexes, and the older of the two is chasing Grant for, like, a good quarter of the book.
For, like, the middle 200 pages of the book.
Through their various escapades down a river that happens to take them through an aviary full of deadly pterodactyls.
Yes. No, the pterodactyls.
Pterodactyls. Yeah.
Because I think the pterodactyls would have been too big for having been caged in an aviary.
Something like that.
Which didn't stop the pterodactyls from being homicidal maniacs.
Yeah. Or territorial.
No, territorial. Yeah.
But I think my favorite ridiculous T-Rex thing was actually not the tongue through the waterfall, though that was pretty ridiculous, but actually where they're going down the river and the foliage is so thick that the T-Rex can't get through.
Oh yeah.
But like it keeps like every 100 yards it pops its head back over the trees like, I'm gonna eat you. God damn it, like backs off.
Yeah.
Jogs a little farther down the river. I'm gonna eat you, son of a bitch. God, I'll be back. And they're just like, this is frightening. Like, we're trapped in the middle of this river, and if it actually gets through the trees, it's going to eat us.
Yeah, I thought the T-Rex encounters, like, started to get kind of ridiculous after a while. Yes. It was like, oh, by the way, we ran into the T-Rex again!
Right.
And, and I was like, oh my god.
It tries to eat them through the car. It stampedes a herd of dinosaurs onto them. It tries to eat them on the river. It swims
yep.
like a freaking crocodile.
Ellie, like, screams with celebration when they're trying to be all stealthy because she thinks that they got away by getting onto the raft.
Right.
And then it starts swimming at them.
It chases the car. It does the foliage hide-and-seek.
Did the big T-Rex chase? I think the small T-Rex chased the car.
Was that the small one?
Because I think the small one does the chasing of everybody
else.
The T-Rex,
I think you're
pretty
right.
much exclusively chases.
All right, so that was separate. And then there was the waterfall. So that was five separate incidences of attempted T-Rex
and
attack.
And it would have kept going if it hadn't have...
By the big one. The little one chased a car... And
killed
ate Ed Regis.
Ate Ed Regis, yeah.
And
did something else, too.
It actually helped Grant and the kids because it showed up and tried to
find
Bogart the Big Rex's kill.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have gotten it.
There were a couple moments like that, yeah. There was also kind of, and it was a very, like, book thriller-y setup. But it'd be like, they'd go to the control room and they'd be like, oh man, if they went through the area where the aviary is, then those pterodactyls are going to eat the fuck out of them. And then it's like...
Meanwhile, at the aviary.
Yeah.
Oh no, whoever could have predicted the pterodactyl attack?
I hope they're not in the river, because all the Dilophosaurs hang out by the river.
Meanwhile, at the river.
Oh my god, that's a Dilophosaur. I hear they spit poison. Get your heads below the raft line. Whoever could have predicted this would happen? What an insane coincidence.
Finally, Muldoon takes things into his own hands, packs a rocket launcher that shoots tranquilizer darts, and goes and hits the T-Rex in the butt.
That seemed a bit overkill with a rocket launcher.
Well, I mean, it is like a 30-ton animal.
That's true.
Considering it takes like an elephant gun to shoot a horse tranquilizer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine it takes like an RPG to launch a big enough dart.
God, DART's gotta be have like a half gallon reservoir on it too.
Well, then there's the whole like separated nervous system thing. It's got to get to all of the segments of its brain.
Yeah. It took a while for that big old DART to kick in.
Right. Not quick enough to keep, was it Tim that got the tongue bath?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, my.
There was actually a lot of goop and blood and things like that.
Lots of innards, lots of disemboweling, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or I was the scene where Grant's in the incubating room and, like, throwing the eggs, and it's talking about him getting, like, egg all over him. He, like, falls down the egg and is like,
whoa! And there's, like, yolk dripping off and, like, it's...
Fertilized embryos.
It's always gross. So the scene with the eggs, actually, there's one thing I wanted to bring up about that. So Grant's poisoning eggs and feeding the raptors to kill them off, which is actually pretty clever.
Mm-hmm.
Though there was, like, even for the book, that little bit of a Hollywood touch to it, where all of the, like, really nasty poisons he's injecting in the eggs were, like, glowing.
Yeah. Like, the eggs started glowing green.
It's like, what?
Yeah. The rule of thumb when you're dealing with things that glow is that if it's putting off light, that's probably not the only thing it's putting off.
Like, wouldn't the raptors be smart enough not to eat a glowing green egg?
Poisons, there are lots of chemicals in your average household that can make you really sick or kill you, and none of them glow. Like, that'd be a tip-off, right? Wait, which ones of these do I not drink? All of them, they're cleaning chemicals. But especially the ones that glow.
Yeah.
It's like, seems way less of a threatening plot device than, like, iocane powder. It's like...
Yeah, right. Tasteless, odorless, tears of lice. Deadly. Yeah. Deadly.
Exactly.
We rolled the glowing green egg at the raptor, and the raptor bent down for the egg, and a facehugger jumped out. And, like, that's what I'm picturing when I read that.
Shit. And the entire plot of Prometheus happened, and no one cared.
All right, so is anyone going to make the movie Jurassic Park versus Alien?
Oh, I will. Let's start a Kickstarter campaign. Let's see, what do you think the budget on that will run? $90 million or so? Yeah. So we better make it a long one. We'll take 3 months to raise the funds.
The trick is going to be hiring a producer willing to ruin their career over it.
Oh, it can't be that hard.
Oh, we'll just get U-Ball.
Yeah, exactly.
The Velociraptors.
Do you think U-Ball even knows his career is ruined?
Velociraptors have guns.
That's why it's so easy for them to do bad movies.
They're probably smart enough to pull a trigger.
And later, they'll digitally remake the movie so the raptors have radios. Because it's a Steven Spielberg film. Okay. Anyway.
Can't have shotguns.
Anyway.
Anywho. So, I think this quote is also in the movie The Nature Will Find a Way thing that we were talking about earlier.
Yes, definitely.
I want to even say that's, like, on the cover of the movie.
It's possible.
But one of the things...
Ian Malcolm quotables.
Yes, that
yes.
Malcolm's really big about is, you know, the park is never going to work, and he all pulls it into chaos theory.
Right, which is, like, an interesting use of chaos theory, which I'd say, like, most of it is a correct application, but it's where he starts getting super predictive with it, that it starts to, like, go against what chaos theory really does. Like, chaos theory is a predictive science that says that things tend to be predetermined by their starting conditions, you know, given that all else goes according to plan. So it's, like, because it started out as this park full of dinosaurs, then everything's eventually going to go to shit. Which, I mean, is a pretty easy assumption to make just intuitively. But the best thing you could do with chaos theory is say that because it's full of so many unknowns, it's going to go extremely one way or the other. The fact that Malcolm decided it was going to go into uncontrolled dinosaurs kill everyone as opposed to the dinosaurs run themselves extinct was kind of an arbitrary choice. And he, I guess, for plot reasons, got lucky.
Or what about the time when Arnold's like, everything's almost back under control, and he's like, now there's going to be the Ian Malcolm effect, where everything seems like it's about to get together, but then it all goes to shit again.
Right, and it's like trying to apply fractals to that. It's just like the biggest... Oh, by the way, we have computers that can graph fractals in 89, so let's just go ahead and put those in.
Right, yeah. So, chaos theory, instead of being a predictive theory, because the purpose of it is to say some systems are unpredictable, is more of a generally, if there are enough variables, then it's impossible to predict, so things will definitely go wrong. Right, that's kind of what he should be saying instead of, oh, I predicted this will happen. I predicted this will happen.
He kind of takes Wrong to be as representing the dinosaurs breaking out and killing people, whereas Wrong really should be represented by any deviation from the intended purpose of the park, which, you know, could encompass all of the carnivores refusing to eat and dying out, or, you know, any kind of things going wrong circumstances.
It's like all the issues they had before all hell broke loose, basically. Like, they didn't...
Chaos theory only starts getting predictive when you can compare it to existing models, which is why it's good for, like, meteorology. Hey, we've seen this very specific set of variables occur in this weather pattern before, so we can assume this is going to happen. But I don't think Ian Malcolm's ever experienced an island full of dinosaurs at any point in his life, so...
Probably not.
Right.
Like, the best conclusion you could come to is an asteroid's going to hit the island and what.
Well, asteroids are just drawn to dinosaurs. They like big asteroid magic.
Given his sample size, that's probably the most accurate thing we can
say. Good thing we got rid of those bastards. That was dangerous for us.
Yeah, but... one of the things I did like about, before Malcolm got, like, obnoxious, his talk about the park being doomed to fail, is that you see all the different pieces that it is doomed to fail. Like, at the beginning you're introduced to dinosaurs having made it to the mainland, and then you find out that they're breeding, and then you find out that the system doesn't work the way they want it to, and then the dinosaurs are acting this way that they don't want them to, and it's not like, oh, you know, Nedry shutting down the power... like, was the sole reason the park failed.
Well, the fact that they have different versions of dinosaurs in general, you kind of get an idea that stuff is not going according to plan to begin
with. Right. They didn't come out exactly correctly the first time.
They've been in, like, Band-Aid mode since day one.
Yeah, it really sounds like it, actually.
It's like they, going back to the whole, like, post-it note things, they shoved this, like, battleship out into the ocean and have been, like, putting... patches of rusty welded plate over the leaks since.
Yeah, that's good. It'll hold. It still floats. What could be going wrong? That's like Hammond's thing.
Yeah, it's only a minor detail. Every time something just goes completely shitty, oh, it's only a minor detail.
We need to seal up that screen door below the water line, as it turns out.
Turns out putting a hibachi grill next to the torpedo tubes was a poor choice.
but that is nice because, and I mean, I haven't seen the movie in a little while, but I mean, in the movie, I think it comes across maybe more as like Nedry is a fuckface who makes everything go wrong.
Right, like it should have worked if not for this
exactly
bad guy who does this thing.
I think the book does a lot better job of coming at it from a scientific viewpoint of, hey, 65 million years, there's obviously a lot that could go wrong because none of the environment that was there when the dinosaurs were alive is the same anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right?
It's like, they're not going to behave like animals in a zoo because they're not animals. They're dinosaurs. That's the interesting thing, is they refer to the dinosaurs as animals throughout the entirety of the book. They refer to them as though, you know, it could be a polar bear exhibit. When it's not polar bears.
I think Hammond actually says a couple of times, well, it's just a zoo.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they are animals. They're just such unfamiliar animals for our context that they might as well be aliens.
Right.
You know?
That actually kind of struck me a little bit. It's just that the ease, it seems, that the characters refer to the dinosaurs as animals, which they are animals.
It's hubris creeping back in, right?
They're non-human, you know, high-functioning organisms, but, you know, you still kind of view them as a separation from what you'd colloquially consider animals.
Someone even mentioned that all of, you know, current zoo technology is all based on keeping large mammals in a, you know, like a kind of like a tamed slice of an environment that we know,
mm-hmm.
whereas these are large reptoavian amphibian things that we have no idea what their environment should be, so we can't put them in a slice of it.
So it makes sense why the Triceratops has constant diarrhea in the book, you know?
There you go.
They keep eating poison berries, whoa!
Yeah, well, and in addition to the problems with the animals, they're also having a lot of trouble with just, like, the systems in the park,
mm-hmm.
Which really rang true to me. just like the types of engineering problems they're having or the types of software problems they're having. Like, oh, here's a hole that no one really foresaw because it's malfunctioning in a way that you can't really predict.
Right. It's like some sensor alarm kept going off even though nothing was triggering it. And it was due to some, you know, call error.
Yeah, or there was like one of the feeding hoppers or something. Someone must have put a wrong digit in one of their program because it was refreshing every 12 hours instead of 24.
Yeah,
but they couldn't, and then they couldn't track the feeding because if they emptied the hoppers, then the alarm would just scream forever.
and it found like some disease in all of the stool, so it was like giving them all medication that they didn't need.
Yeah, and they couldn't take the medication out, or it would just replace itself.
Yeah,
so there were clearly some issues in the system to begin with, even before Nedry's shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they, after everything, after the chaos hits, and they get the power back on the first time, and it's actually auxiliary power, but no one realized it. Or, like, they knew how it worked, but they didn't really think about it at the time.
I think Arnold knew, but just forgot, because he was so tired and stressed out.
Right, which is a very human moment, and also, again, like, a believable engineering setup, the way they had it. We use the auxiliary power to kickstart the main power when it goes out, and you don't just let it restart, because if there's a short somewhere, it'll just keep going until it blows up.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real system, I bet.
But then, you know, has the understandable brain fart in a crisis situation.
I've been awake for 20 hours staring at code.
While dinosaurs attack.
Not at my best.
Did we want to touch on the whole, like, consumerist science versus, like, true science
argument?
Yeah,
let's hit that.
Poseidon.
What?
The consumerist science versus, like, pure science idea. Just, you know, like, a couple of times in the book.
Well, I mean, it's mostly like an argument between Wu and Hammond.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Hammond embodies the whole science for consumers, like, shove everything we can into an iPhone and sell it to people. Whereas Wu, coming from academia, definitely stands for, like, we want to keep seeing what we can do with this genetic science. Like, can we make the dinosaurs new and interesting and different and docile and safe? And Hammond just doesn't understand the science for the sake of science argument.
Well, I don't even think he necessarily cares why the animals are real. He wants to make them more realistic just so he can make more money. Where I think Wu understands that if you make them more docile, then it's obviously for a park and it's not going to go around killing people.
Right. Well, I mean, in Hammond, I mean, you can tell that Michael Crichton is perhaps leaning a little more towards the science for science idea, because Hammond even goes so far as to, I'm paraphrasing, but say, who gives a crap about curing cancer?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he actually talks about why no one should be motivated to do that, and they should be making sparkly things for people at home instead.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is kind of, was becoming more true in 89, it's certainly true now, that, you know, things like NASA and various other government science programs that are science for science, you know, exploring space and things of the like, aren't getting the best people because they're not as well funded as they used to be. And it's right. Kind of like a deviation away from discovery for the sake of discovery, which might have been a Cold War, like a child of the Cold War, where we were at least competing with somebody to right. try and be the most technologically advanced. Now it's kind of, what can we make that will sell? Which is...
Right, well, because businesses pay better if you're a scientist and you develop new stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to go where you're going to chase the money. That's what people do.
Yeah, you can make the argument that drives the actual technology.
I certainly don't have a problem with it.
At the beginning of the book, I actually had a problem that they were like, oh, no, people are getting away from just doing science for the sake of science. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, society moves ahead because all this technology seeps into domestic life, and that's how we have iPhones and all this and the other.
Yeah, and who's to say that somebody researching something for creature comforts won't stumble across something that will actually make a big difference in everybody's life? And it's happened before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's still obviously the science for science crowd out there with organizations like CERN that are just, you know, trying to push the boundaries.
Yeah, I love particle physics as much as anybody.
Right. Clearly that Higgs boson is going to make my iPhone faster.
It'll Google that before I even type it in.
Right, but like the evil of the imbalance is probably not quite as stark as it's presented in this story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all economically driven. And when the money is in creature comforts as it is, you know, in our current society, especially American society, you're going to have the better, brighter, more deserving scientists making things that just make you feel better, as opposed to making things that will actually, you know, improve life as a whole in the future.
Or just, with you flying know, cars and figure out a new science thing, like, oh, we discovered this.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can make money off of this. Hooray. All right, so how about the, I think we've dug out enough of this. Let's really get into wrap-up mode here, so... How about the writing itself?
Yeah, strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
I mean, it's Crichton.
It's Crichton. I agree.
It's decent.
It moved quickly.
It yeah. reads very easily.
Yeah.
It is about as solid as commercial prose gets.
I mean, yeah. it's pretty formulaic. Like, maybe not as solid as, like, King. But, I mean, King has a certain depth that Crichton never really bothers with.
King likes to go off and explore corners of his brain every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, if you had a spectrum for, like, the sci-fi thriller writers, you'd put, like, Dean Koontz on one end and Michael Crichton on the other, and then Stephen King would be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, the Crichton, I mean, Jurassic Park is pretty tightly written.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's plotted out well. Probably you could... you know, there's not a lot you would probably want to cut.
Cut out one of the T-Rex.
Maybe one of the T-Rex attacks and maybe the aviary as long as we're at it.
It's kind of random.
And then Lex is just kind of there to round out the cast. I don't think she's actually necessary.
It'd be nice if she did something, but...
She almost serves a purpose of putting, more people in danger.
I guess. Yeah. Her purpose is to make Grant more heroic, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
She's a catalyst for both danger and heroicism.
Context and relevance.
Well.
Especially for classics, because this is a classic.
Indeed. The movie
what?
Is the most...
Oh, right, there's a movie!
Yeah. Is the most relevant thing about this book, honestly. Like, I think people would still know and enjoy Jurassic Park if there wasn't a movie. But I think the reason everyone knows it is because of the movie.
I would say that the love of Jurassic Park is entirely driven by the movie, as far as modern audience goes. Like, if there was never a movie based on this book, and actually my edition of the book says soon to be a major motion picture, which makes me laugh. But, I mean, people who are under a certain age would not be familiar with it.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can say that about most books that become successful movies, at least.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that about Starship Trooper, because Starship Trooper movie was terrible, and the book's amazing.
Well, it's because they're different things that share a title.
Yeah.
whereas I don't think the Harry Potter series would have the commercial success it got as a book. If not for the exposure to this movie.
I don't agree with that, because the books were insanely popular even before the movies came out.
But,
and a lot of people who watch the movies don't read the books.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see the perspective of, there was certainly...
Disagree!
There was certainly a group of people that wouldn't have read the books if I hadn't seen the movie. That, there has to be a group of people that
That's true for any movie of any book.
Maybe not to the same degree, but that's something that'll carry on into the future. Like, clearly Harry Potter would have been a phenomenon right now, as it came out. But I think several decades from now, the movies might actually be what turn young people on to reading the books.
I feel like it's some nerdy parents that will turn their children on to Harry Potter.
The same way that The Lord of the Rings got read so much more recently.
That's
true. Because they made movies about it.
Lord of the Rings is also, and I think I've said this before on the podcast, but it's the rare example of the movie that is actually significantly better than the book.
And actually... Is Jurassic Park the book or the movie better?
They're both, you know, I actually think of them...
Personal opinion.
I think they're very, very similar. Like, they're both really tightly plotted, well-done thrillers for their medium.
Yeah.
They're both the, like, they're blockbusters.
Yeah, exactly.
In both formats.
And the things that got left out of the movie that were in the book didn't need to go into a movie version of it.
That's true.
Yeah.
And although I did like at the beginning of the book, I feel like the ominous nature of the book was done much better in the book than the movie.
The opening mystery of the book I really liked better than the opening of the film.
Yeah. But I mean, you just don't have time for that kind of exposition in a film.
But obviously I do love the movie.
Yes. And actually the T-Rex, the initial T-Rex attack was pretty close in the movie to what it was in the book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most similar scene, and it works really well in print and on screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the night vision goggles played a bigger role in the book than they did in the movie, but they at least gave the nod that, hey, by the way, we did put the night vision goggles on. Tim has a field day with those things, like the entirety of the novel.
He does. Once he has them, he keeps them.
Okay, so, questions for the book?
How many dinosaurs are hanging out in Costa Rica?
Like, not enough. I don't know, are we talking about Lost World or Jurassic Park?
Talking about Jurassic Park. This is Jurassic Park.
Probably not many after getting firebombed.
But, oh yeah, I guess we didn't mention that the island totally gets destroyed in the book.
Oh yeah, I guess that didn't happen in the movie, did it?
Yeah. No. They blow it up.
Yeah, it's a big old fireball.
Yep.
Which actually, I would expect the military to do that. Be like, you know what, fuck this.
Like, here's this crazy ecological threat, and let's just blow it up.
The same way they'd react to, like, a disease they don't understand. It's like, let's just burn it till it doesn't exist anymore.
I did feel kind of bad when all the dinosaurs were dying.
There was that pack of raptors that made it off.
Poor baby raptors.
By the way, also raptors made it off the island. They're scurrying around Costa Rica eating all of the high lysine foods.
That's and right. Their compies are eating the babies.
They're not eating, they're just biting.
No, they're just tearing their faces
Sometimes
off.
They're eating.
They eat a little bit. Mostly it's just kind of like playful bitings. As playful as bites that poison you can be.
All right, so just run down the list. Verdict, Ben.
Okay, I like it. Good thriller. It shows its age a little in a couple spots, but still fun.
Saeed.
Like the read, fast and fun.
Casey.
Yeah, I mean, you take it at the value it's worth as a commercial blockbuster, and it's very fun.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's a good fluff piece, but yeah, definitely don't read it looking for anything but OMG dinosaurs. So, what are we reading right now?
I'm reading Death Masks, which is the next book in the Dresden Files by Jim Butcher.
Number five which is, or six, I believe.
One of those.
Been all over.
So I'm reading book 8 of the Dresden Files.
Which is kind of hilarious. By the way, just a coincidence.
Gear myself up for reading Dance with Dragons because I need, like, as much fluff prose as I can possibly take before tackling Gurm.
Reading the complete works of Sherlock Holmes.
And by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
And that's it for the next 4 years.
Nearly as classic as Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Sight's starting med school on Monday, so...
Screw he's reading, that.
A lot of, reading about a lot of pseudo-medicine.
We're really excited to just force him to watch, like, ER and Grey's Anatomy. Be like, what's this?
I'm still hoping it'll be like Scrubs.
Yeah. Or House. And I don't read, obviously.
We just read all these big, dense nerd books, and then you can't read a new one every week.
We just force feed her all of the feminist dialogue from the novels they talk about.
I've been reading Cosmo, and
I'm reading about details of the Renaissance that nobody knows exists. I'm reading like a 9,000 page book, so I've been reading that for 3 weeks. That's my Gab's impression.
About that.
It's pretty close, though.
I'm surprised you made it for that far. You probably fell asleep halfway through the explanation.
That's right. So, anyway, I think that
kind of
does it for this week. You know, if you have anything you want to add to the conversation, then you can contact us on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can shoot us an email at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
And we are on Twitter at novelideaspod.
We're also on iTunes. If you type in Novel Ideas, click on the podcast link.
Yep, go there. Leave us reviews and shit.
Good reviews, preferably.
Yeah, we like haven't had a listener mail segment in several weeks.
That's true. We haven't been hearing from people's office.
It's disappointing.
It's sad. I would have written them something, but it turns out they were going to have me on anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. This is what happens when you have literally dozens of listeners.
Dozens upon dozens.
That 1 in 1,000 ratio of people who write in, it works out to like 1 every 6 weeks.
Yeah. And next week we are continuing our bestseller run.
With The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. Going back to some YA, because we loves us some good YA around here.
Yeah, and if anyone's ever heard of the book Looking for Alaska, John Green's the author of that book. So yeah. That's the tie-in there. And apparently it's going to be kind of depressing, so.
The summary of it certainly sounds so. But I guess we'll know more next time. So anyway, I think that's it for this week. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, we're going to go watch Jurassic Park now.
With riff tracks.
Laters.
Holy fucking shit, it's a dinosaur. Holy shit, what the fuck?